everybody, welcome to the Culture Shock Podcast, and I've got my special guest today. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi guys, how's it going? My name's Nicholas Charlet. I'm based here in London, like you, Steven.
Yeah.
I grew up all over the place, so I guess that's kind of the key feature about me.
Yeah.
I was born in Japan, in Tokyo, and then I moved to Germany, South Africa, Austria, Germany, the US. I lived a bit in Israel, and then volunteered in Zambia before moving to London. So
wow.
Lived in a lot of different places, studied engineering, so that's my background, and then did a bit of consulting, and now running my coaching business.
Oh, wow. I mean, you've lived pretty much a colorful life.
There we go.
I mean, let's just talk about your background just a little bit. So you lived in all those places. What did you take from it in terms of meeting different people and, you know, the cultures and stuff? Did you feel like there was a culture shock? No pun intended, but did you feel like there was a culture shock going to different places and how you adapted to it as well?
Yeah, it's a great question. I feel like the biggest thing that I got out of it was adaptability. Mm-hmm. So going to all these different places, like I remember one of the big culture shocks that I had was like when I moved to Germany or Austria, both times, like I've been playing soccer or what you guys call football.
Football.
like basically since the age I was 5 years old.
Yeah.
So when I joined like a club in Austria and in Germany, I remember I think I was about like 10 years old when I moved to Vienna, Austria, and I just remember being in a changing room filled with like whatever, like 20 boys, 10-year-old boys, and like I don't know, I didn't speak a word of German.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was kind of just like every like that was kind of the story, like always feeling kind of out of place, but then always managing to become part of it regardless. And so I guess that's been the greatest opportunity too, is that I feel like I can make myself comfortable in any place I go, any environment. So that's pretty cool.
That's interesting, because I guess in that scenario, people would be like overthinking about what to do and probably speeding up the process of facing in.
Yeah.
Was that kind of where you were, or did you say, look, I'm going to stand out, or did you find a balance between the two of them?
That's a great question. I think at 10 years old, well, I guess it was happening, you know, like, I guess the best way I could describe it is everyone's always, when I've told people my life story, they've always been like, oh my God, that's crazy, that's amazing, that's, you know. But at the time, for me, it was just life. Since I was just living it, I didn't know it was anything special. It's only when I moved to London later and like had like adult conversations, I was like, oh, maybe this wasn't quite normal, right? But like at the time, I was just like, this is it. So sitting in that locker room, not speaking a word, I was kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I didn't even think about the fact that I was the only one not speaking. I don't know. It just like didn't seem like that big of a deal. I do remember at some point, I think I was still quite young, but I did burst out crying one time when I was going home. My dad was picking me up from soccer practice, and I think I just had enough, and I was like, screw this, like, I don't know, but I got over it, and I joined the team again and stuff, and I think I kept going, but I think at the time, I was so sick of having to make an effort, because it's like every time, not speaking the language, the culture's always different too, so even if you do learn the language, there's little things that always keep you a little bit on the outside, but yeah, like I say, huge opportunity too, because today, I'm in London and I get along with literally everyone, you know, all my friends are either Greek or from the US or from China or from wherever. I get along with everyone. So it's awesome.
I think it's a really interesting story, but also a good one to sort of learn, because it's probably built the foundations of who you are today. And obviously acceptance is probably something that you empathize with as well.
Exactly.
And the benefits of being in London is that we do get along quite well. I mean, no matter our slight differences, there's some commonalities that we have in London that, you know, we're all here for the same reasons, and also we all are the same person. So it's really good to sort of see that sort of connection with everyone.
Yeah.
And I guess you talked about your job. You're a sort of mechanical engineer.
Yeah, studying mechanical engineering. I mean, it's kind of funny because I guess a lot of people that meet me now are like, what the heck, this guy studied engineering? Because I'm not technical at all.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the time, my father preached basically like security. He was quite risk averse when it came to his kids, I think. So he worked in management, so I guess it's not that risk averse. Like, you got to take risks and stuff. But I guess for his family, he always felt like quite that we should do stuff that would set us up for the future.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think in his mind, it was like, you can't go wrong with an engineering degree. Mm-hmm. So if you do engineering, you can become an engineer. You can become a mathematician, you can become a scientist, you can become a teacher, you can do whatever you want, really, with an engineering degree. You can't go wrong. Whereas, I guess, in his mindset, if you did a history degree or something, or not to, you know,
if someone did
history, I personally love history, so I would have, maybe if I were to do it again, maybe I'd do history. But I guess he thought just engineering was a safe bet. Mm. So
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's kind of the parent model back then, and, you know, making sure they had the best for the kids, setting up their future in that way.
Yeah.
There's no harm in that, but I guess when you start going into this industry as yourself, you start realizing, is this what I really asked for, or is this something that was paid for me, you know, just to be secure? Exactly. And I think now people are kind of waking up and saying, actually, I don't know, maybe I want to do that career shift. And I think it's now the time when people start doing that and start seeing what was possible.
Yeah.
And you've made that career switch for yourself, and now you're yourself. So.
I didn't make it straight away. So there was tech consulting in between.
Yeah.
So that was my way of saying, I don't want to make nothing of that engineering technical degree. Yeah. I kind of want to stay there a little bit, you know, like use it somewhat. But in the end, the consulting role ended up being very much client facing. So it's kind of like it's these models where there's a big offshore team. And then basically here in London, in the UK in general, it's more about the selling and the delivering and the face of the company and stuff. So I don't know, it was a good role, but it wasn't as technical as I thought it would be. So pretty much, went down that kind of business route. Yeah. So
You end up sort of switching from your technical side to more of the soft skills side.
Exactly.
And, you know, obviously developing some skills from that area too. Yeah. And what made you say, okay, I had enough of this and kind of want to start doing my own thing?
My sister has played a huge part in my life in general, and her and I are like best friends pretty much. Yeah. So she's had a huge influence, and she started her own business. She actually does coaching as well.
Okay.
Performance coaching. So primarily directed towards empowering women. But I think at some level I always knew I was going to get out. I was always going to do something independent. I don't fare so well in environments where people tell me exactly what to do. Yeah. I love serving people. I love serving my clients. I love serving whoever it is, you know, I told you about that networking event. Like, I love serving people and bring value to them, but I don't like someone telling me how to do it and what I have to do. And, you know, so I think that independence was never going to really work out. So I think somewhere down the line, it was just like, this feels like the right next step, you know? And, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting because I say, you know, living life on your own terms. And I mean, I don't know when you made that switch. Was it recently or was it something that happened a time where it wasn't as popularized?
January 2017, I officially left my company.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah. Because I guess, I mean, the knowledge is there now for you to sort of say, you know, I can build on my own. And
exactly.
Without having the sort of pressures of society saying this is unacceptable.
Yeah.
Now there's sort of blueprints that exist and books that exist and, you know, podcasts and all sorts that kind of teach you how to sort of do it on your own. And, you know, it's good to take a brief step. Was anyone supportive or unsupportive of your decision?
I consider myself very lucky. Yeah. I have a very supportive family. So my parents are very supportive. I think they partly realized since we traveled so much and they set us up for such a strange, as it turns out, kind of life, unique life, that they were going to have minimal control in the end product. So I guess my dad did get us like to do solid degrees and stuff. So I did engineering, which was good. But at the end of the day, I think they both knew we were going to do our own thing. They weren't going to be able to predict it because they set us up for this like weirdness and uniqueness. So that's kind of how it panned out. I've got a circle of friends who have always been there and were very, very supportive guys that I can tap into and really get support from. And as you know, as an entrepreneur too, you got your own business. Like, things go up and down. So they're there in the highs to celebrate with me the victories. Yeah. But similarly, they're also there when things aren't looking as good. So it's good.
It's very good to have that support system. I think it's a lonely sort of place to be sometimes, and you have your thoughts and you know, you see the future but you recognize the past and you're trying to pivot from both directions. Yeah. And it can be stressful, but it's definitely something that you say, you know, I put myself in that situation and I would rather have this than coming into work, clocking in, clocking out.
Exactly.
And it's a beautiful life if you really think about it, but it needs to be documented because it's a lot of glamour in it.
Yeah.
But no one sees the lows of it as well.
That's why I think it's amazing you're doing a podcast.
Well, thank you.
You bring this out, and I think that's an element that doesn't get brought out as much. I feel like everyone talks about, everyone looks at, you know, the Gary V's of the world or the Grant Cardone's, hopefully your audience is those people, but you know, you see the success and you're just like, ah, okay. Like, they had it so easy. They had, you know, even this morning I was posting on my Instagram live story, a post about Eminem.
Yeah.
And, like, first time he went on stage with the mic, like, he got booed.
Yeah,
and he went home. He said, I'm done. Mm. I quit. And like, you just think that decision, had he stuck to that decision, we would not know Eminem, we would not know 8 Mile, the movie wouldn't exist, like, all his songs, everything that he's created, like, all the synergies that he created later on wouldn't exist, you know? So I think it's good to sometimes see the failures and the upsets and the fact that it isn't, you know, it's not, it doesn't always work that well, and it takes time, too. It's experience, right? The longer you stay in it, the higher probability, I think, of making it.
Absolutely. Just funny thing about the Eminem story you mentioned. If Eminem quit, there wouldn't be 50 Cent. If there wasn't a 50 Cent, the whole rap genre would have changed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I mean, 50 Cent was brought up by Eminem and Dr. Dre. Oh, Eminem found 50 Cent. It's a cycle. And it's the same connected. Thing. Yeah, it's all connected. So from what you're doing, you're coaching others to sort of do the same thing. And if you weren't there for them, then they might not be in the place they might be. And vice versa, and all that
and
stuff.
All the people that they impact too. Yeah. Exactly. No, you're so right. You're so right. And how many people listen to... I know from my coaching clients, someone who used one of... I think maybe Lose Yourself, or one of the tracks, basically, he used it during one of the worst years of his life to get through it. And it's just like, you know... I don't know, the material is impactful. You know, if people just say, oh, maybe it's just a rap song or this. Nah, for some people, it's the way to get through, so... Music, everything matters.
Music is so important. I swear to you. It's the most powerful thing ever, and it has the ability to move, change, and also document as well, because you know when you listen to music, what time period it was, when it was. It's just something that transcends.
Takes you back.
Yeah, it takes you back. In terms of your clients, how's that been in terms of like coaching them and getting them involved and sort of the mentality of, you know, being a winner in life?
I love it, man. To be honest, I you know, we talk about flow, and for me, that is flow. I lose myself, I guess not only in coaching, I lose myself in conversations with people. So generally, a good conversation can make my day. I've told people that before, and they're like, what the fuck? Like, you know, a conversation can, or I don't know if you're allowed to swear on this.
No, you better go for it. It's uncensored. It's
fine. All right, cool. I'm a loose cannon. But,
yeah, go for it.
I love speaking to people. It lights me up. In a lot of cases, I hope it lights them up because that's what I've been told. Like, my energy is quite positive, so hopefully that's what they get out of it too. But the coaching is the next level, because coaching, whereas like a conversation, you never know whether you want to go that deep or not. Yeah. My coaching clients have committed to me challenging them and to calling them out on their BS.
Yeah.
You know, and I find that beautiful. And I also find them honorable for doing it, because it takes guts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I've had coaches, I have a coach actually currently too. And by getting a coach, you're admitting that not everything in your life is working the way you want it to. And that in itself, a lot of people aren't willing to accept that, you know, you're not as good as you make yourself out to be. There's always, you can always go the extra step, even if you love your life, which I do in a lot of respects. There's always a next step. I love it.
I think it's, again, you mentioned something like the vulnerability of knowing yourself and saying, maybe I want to be better. And you could be in a good spot as well, but you just want to be a better version of yourself.
Cristiano Ronaldo, right?
Yeah.
That guy. The guy that has nothing to prove, right?
Yeah.
He's still at it. Tom Brady in the U.S. Like, he's, again, I think 5 Super Bowls, maybe 6.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Like, and I know your audience might be more UK-based, but... if you research the guy, he's like Cristiano Ronaldo. He's really, really impressive. And like, both these guys have nothing to prove. But they're the types of guys that will pay $1 million to get a mentor to help them do whatever they need. And nothing to prove, right? Yeah. But they're like, I want to better myself. So that's what's required.
Yeah. Just a question on that. The psychological aspect of being a winner, what is that to that person? Because it's kind of this thing where it's like, I want to just achieve and, you know, smash goals and stuff. And not everyone has that. It's like more of a complacency mindset. Okay, as long as I'm happy, then it's okay. Like, comfortability. Does everyone have that potential to be a winner? Or is it just that select few that have that mindset to do it?
My belief, and again, I think this is always open for opinions, right?
Yeah.
So everyone will have a different view on the matter. My belief is everyone can be a winner. I'm not saying that everyone will reach the heights of Cristiano Ronaldo in soccer, nor will everyone become as exceptional a rapper as Dr. Dre or Eminem or any of these guys, right? Mm-hmm. But what I will say is to each to their own, mm-hmm. everyone can be a winner.
Yeah.
And then it's up to you to step up, to take enough action in your life so that you can discover different facets of yourself, experience enough things so that you can discover what it is for you that you want to be a winner mm-hmm. in. But I believe everyone can be a winner. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe people being complacent or lazy is, I don't think people are like that. I think they just haven't found stuff that triggers them enough, that motivates them enough or inspires them enough mm-hmm. to go after what they really want. I think in life we do what we want. We're pulled by what we want.
Yeah.
And a lot of cases I feel people give themselves too much of a break. They stop when it gets a little hard, and instead of, I don't know, and I know some people are working incredibly hard, right? But mm-hmm. I guess I'm just saying, I feel like, if you don't feel like you've reached your, you haven't found what really lights your soul on fire, like,
yeah.
keep searching. Keep going out, trying new things out, keep talking to people.
Yeah.
It actually reminds me of my sister. Before she moved on to launch her first entrepreneurial venture, she spent about a year just formally interviewing, but mm-hmm. whenever she went to a house party, whenever she met someone at a cafe, or whenever she was just randomly talking to people, she would ask them, do you enjoy what you're doing? Mm-hmm. You know, do you enjoy your job? Do you enjoy your career?
Yeah.
And she'd wait for the answer.
Right.
And in like 80% of the cases, most people would say they hated their jobs. Mm-hmm. And eventually a couple people started saying they did like them. And one of the things that came up was coaching. So yeah. a lot of the people that are coaching were happy or bad, at least what they were doing. It didn't yeah. mean that everything was perfect, but they were happier with their lives. And so that inspired her to start her own business. So
yeah, that's interesting. So in terms of obviously the coaching and how people, you know, start to look into that as a career option, how's that community? Is it an embracing one, or is it competitive because everyone kind of has their own clients and they want to sort of fight for those clients to be retained and stuff like that? How does that work?
To be completely honest with you, I think it's all mindset.
Mm.
I believe mindset / I guess like experience in sales, I guess, or in how you present yourself and how you're able to go out there and serve people. But I guess that the reason that's my answer is because some people say it's extremely competitive. Some people say like there's coaches out everywhere out there.
Yeah.
But I truly believe that if your sole purpose is to serve people, mm-hmm. there are, especially in a city like London, there's 11 million people in London.
Yeah.
I've met so many random people through networking and random cafes, just sparking up conversation. Like, I don't believe it's that hard. Like, there's so much opportunity. Whether or not you capitalize on that opportunity, and that's, I guess, that experience / sales part that I was talking about, the second part of the answer, that's experience, that's getting enough no's so that you realize what gets a yes, you know, like, I think there's things like that, but for me, it's mostly mindset. Like, if you're in a mindset that there's nothing out there, it's so competitive and that's not going to work,
yeah,
I think you're destined for one result.
Mm, it's true.
And the same is true of the opposite. Yeah. You think there's a lot of opportunity, there's 11 million people, and that everyone technically could use a life coach to, you know, to better their lives, you know. I have a life coach, and I'm a coach, so
yeah.
There's always that stigma around, two coaches have their whole lives figured out. No, it's not about that. Mm-hmm. It's just, again, about improving and working on those blind spots in your own life.
Yeah, and in terms of that mindset, just, you know, knowing that it's competitive, but you're going to go there and obviously win and obviously do the best you can. How do you wake yourself up and say, okay, this is how it's going to be? Do you sort of have a routine in place to sort of gear you up for the day? What keeps you going?
Yeah, multiple things. I think I'm big on motivational content. So I love, I'm big on, I have Audible. Okay. So I listen to Audible.
Yeah.
I read a lot of inspirational stuff. I just finished a book by Jack Ma. Mm-hmm. It's about Jack Ma and Alibaba.
Yeah.
Written by someone outside, but an sort of autobiography there that was quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I read books about like different leaders, different businesses that quite inspire me. And then I guess I use that energy to go out and foster my own type of creativity.
Yeah.
And then I guess something I've been doing recently is working on affirmations.
Okay.
So a lot of people talk about, you know, putting post-its up on you know, in front of your bedroom or, you know, in the kitchen or whatever. And And I've done certain things like that, but I've taken it a step further, taking journaling more seriously and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So trying to go into the subconscious mind. So basically we all think with our conscious minds, and you know, everything that we talk about or that we try to make sense of is all conscious. Like what I'm talking about right now is all conscious.
Yeah.
But then there's a subconscious mind, which is kind of like driving your whole life. It kind of drives the habits. It's kind of that thing, you know, it's kind of the driver of whether or not you take that action or not. You know, you see, I don't know, something you want to do, either you do it or you don't, and your subconscious is a huge part to play in that. Like whether or not you overcome it. And so I've been really trying to nail down the subconscious part to re-imprint new things into my brain.
Yeah. I think the subconscious is quite interesting because, I don't know, for me, I kind of see it like this thing that it's not tangible, but it's like controlling parts of how I behave.
Yeah.
So it's like sometimes you can not fight against it. It seems like it's a bit of an enemy, but it should kind of be used to sort of help improve how you live.
Yeah.
Is it important to train your subconscious, or is it something that you just have to?
Yeah. I actually read, I just finished reading this book, which is a terrible title, and I hate these types of titles, but it's about so much more. So it's called How to Solve All Your Money Problems Forever. And it was recommended actually by the coach that I'm working with. And the reason I bring it up, it's not, again, the title is pretty terrible. It's about like money, but not solely. It's about everything in your life, what you want to create. Money being one of them, if that's of interest to you. But it can be relationships related. Yeah. It can be fitness, health related. Anything that's a goal for you, this book basically tells you how to use affirmations and how to rewire your subconscious. And super interesting stuff. Like, basically, it goes back to stuff in your childhood, right? There was something that happened, a really emotional event. And in that moment, you made a decision subconsciously.
Yeah.
You know, the world is a certain way. You know, you did something and one of your parents shouted at you. And in that moment, you know, maybe your parents was just having a bad day or something. But in that moment, you didn't know that. So you took it as, I'm a bad person for doing this random thing. And then forevermore, you associate that as like one thing. And that's all subconscious. So this book basically talks about how do you take stuff that's been limiting you subconsciously. You wouldn't even know about it. You wouldn't even be able to like, you know, analyze it because you wouldn't know about it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of pulling it out and taking that old image and just like creating a new one and then starting to like blast your brain with the new image until the other one no longer exists.
All right, that's interesting.
This one's holding you back and this one could get you to your goal.
That's so interesting. I mean, I don't know if these two things are the same or they're different, but it's the law of attraction and stuff being, you know, training subconscious. Are they one the same or they're different in terms of principles and how to achieve success?
I would say that they're highly related. Yeah, I think you're right. I think they're highly related. Ultimately, like, I think there's stuff that hasn't been proven necessarily completely scientifically. But if you look at a lot of the top leaders and how they kind of created a lot of their success, a lot of the stuff is about visualization, affirmations. Mm-hmm. They already had a vision in their minds of where they were going, and then it kind of materialized out of nothing. And so I think a lot of people don't like that because you can't create an Excel sheet out of that. You can't, you can't create a PowerPoint to explain it. But again, I think your mind has really powerful capacities, and the more you think about stuff, the more you attract it. And a lot of top leaders have talked about it. Denzel Washington, I remember him being in an interview, he talked about it. There were guys like I don't know, there's just a whole range of people that talk about, you know, seeing it. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger,
he was looking at the poster. And he's looking visualized it, and he trained like the poster. And
I don't know if you saw the recent World Cup that happened this summer, right? There was the French team, Kylian Mbappe.
I don't know
if you saw it, but basically his player is incredible now. Like he was with the French team that won the World Cup, and he had posters in his room, and he used to tell, same story kind of, but he used to tell his friends, I'm going to win the World Cup with the French national team. And we're in 2018 and France won the World Cup.
Yeah.
And so, again, you could say, how many kids said that? Maybe a lot. Maybe there were a million. But I guess maybe the difference also is he literally believed it to the point where he went out and took the action to.
Yeah.
He went to training every day. He did all the work that he needed to do. couple weeks ago or a couple months ago, he was picking up the trophy.
Exactly, yeah. And it's all about work at the end of the day, because I think you can get to a point where you might be overtraining yourself and not putting in the work.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's other times when you put in a lot of effort, but...
Go nowhere. Yeah.
And you're just spinning in your wheels and going, why is that person doing it so quick and with less effort?
Actually, this is what this book talks about. As long as you have the wrong image, so if you're thinking about all the wrong things and taking a bunch of random action, you're still going to end up at the same destination. It's kind of like a GPS system. And if your GPS is failure, unhappiness, feeling sad, like feeling like you're not successful, all these things that just don't help you, if that's what you're thinking about, regardless how much action you take, like it's still going to direct you that way. And even if, let's say, you become successful using that method, chances are those feelings will remain. You still won't feel successful. You still won't.
Yeah.
There's all these things associated with it that won't get you there. So... yeah, I don't know. I just think it's all really
I think what you just mentioned is quite interesting. Not interesting, but it's very important. I think a lot of people are looking at trying to obtain something in the case of not failing. For example, I want to attain a certain amount of money so that I can pay the mortgage versus I want to be rich because I want to be rich and it's good to feel rich and stuff like that. And I think maybe because they don't have that visualization in their mind, they're trying to play a steady game of safe versus going all in and believing what they can do and taking the risk and stuff. I mean, I don't know about you. Have you seen that pattern in people, or have you seen that blueprint for those who are successful, that they always go all in, everything means everything to them. If they fail, they fail hard. And you know, others likely just take the middle ground and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think there's different factors that come into play. I think, if you definitely have the... it comes down to beliefs. Mm-hmm. Your beliefs will drive your life. And your beliefs also stem at a deeper level from your subconscious, as opposed to what people believe. Everyone tries to get to results, I think, through their conscious mind, where your subconscious is so much stronger because it'll actually, like, drive much more powerfully everything else. I think there's different factors. For instance, triggers. There can be different triggers in your life. I've had people on my podcast talk about triggers that occurred earlier in their childhood that still have repercussions today in a positive sense. So there were bad things that happened to them then. They decided to change that story and to say, you know, if they were called insignificant or unworthy, they decided to flip that around. And today they are extremely successful as a result of, you know, leveraging their experiences in a way that actually empowers them versus pushing them down.
I think struggle or just small trauma or just something like that, it can somewhat build a blueprint of how to survive as well as, you know, be successful. But there's one topic that we haven't really touched on, which is one of my questions of the day. The question of the day is, how do you define happiness?
There's a video that I think, well, first of all, I'll say, I think happiness will probably be defined differently by everyone. And I think that is one of the keys to life, is finding what is important to you. I didn't really get that before, but it's actually really deep, because what makes me happy, we were talking about actually with my roommate the other day, both of us love watching movies. Like in the, at the end of a long day, after working hard, like, we love putting on a movie, and that's the way to, like, disconnect and just go into whatever, just, like, chill out. And my assumption, kind of naively, maybe, was that everyone must love watching movies, and that's kind of what everyone could do to, or should do to disconnect. Turns out it couldn't be further from the truth. As it turns out, like, I've spoken to 3-4 people, like, recently, and I've asked that question, like, do you guys, like, also watch? No. These guys don't. They watch either, I don't know, maybe they watch documentaries, or in general they just socialize with people. They like just going out and just like talking or talking to their roommates, or but they just don't watch movies. And that's something that makes me happy. But if I were to put on a movie for them, they would not be happy. So I think the first part of the answer is just like, I think you need to find what's important to you and what makes you happy, because it's going to be different. So there's not going to be one way to kind of globalize it or look at it.
Yeah.
There was another video that that I watched. This will be the second and last part of the answer. You'll notice I always But this guy talked about I think he talked about happiness as being that moment where there are no more worries in front of you, where you find peace, you can just there's literally nothing that is on your mind to pull you down.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even need to be anything pulling you up. I think it's just a state whereby you are just you're in a good place, and you feel like there's you don't need anything, you don't crave anything, you don't need anything, and you're just I guess you're happy with your current circumstance, mm-hmm. or you just enjoy the state of the current circumstances. Not use the happy word.
I find it interesting because kids have that. They literally don't know anything about the world.
So true.
But as they get older, they start seeing things and they start saying, I want that toy. And then it becomes the materialisms that make them happy.
Yeah.
And then as we get older, happiness starts becoming more complicated with relationships and with obviously materialism again and then goals and stuff. So you have all these cocktails that make you happy. And I guess a lot of people try to strive for that level of happiness by trying to attain everything. But it's very hard to sort of achieve those things and juggle those things at the same time and have them in the same level. But those things, like you said, simple things like sitting down watching a movie and just not thinking about too much and just enjoying the moment and being present whilst you're there. It's probably happiness to a lot of people.
Yeah.
It might not be a film. It might be doing something like going to the gym, or it might be, you know, just hanging around with friends and taking that moment in to appreciate where you are.
And I guess what I'd say also is, like, that's why I think there's a space for coaching, for life coaching, is because I feel we live in a world where we're hypercharged, hyperconnected, hyper everything, hyper stressed, hyper anxious.
Mm.
And I feel like a powerful coach, I'm not saying every coach, but a coach that is really powerful and grounded in who they are can help bring others to that state and ground them and bring that peace to them.
Mm.
And from that place, I think everything comes from there.
Yeah.
Peace comes from there. Happiness comes from there. Like, in general, good relationships comes from there. When you're stressed, when you're anxious, how are you going to treat people?
Mm.
Shit, right?
Yeah.
It's their fault. They fucked up. They messed up.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in a peaceful, happy place, like when you're comfortable with yourself, you know, you have more patience for people. Someone screws up something, like, you're patient.
Yeah.
You're okay with it. It's, I'm not saying you're patient your whole life, you're going to wait around, but I'm just saying, like, you had more compassion.
Mm.
I think compassion is something that, I don't find it that it's something that a lot of people talk about or emphasize these days, but compassion is beautiful. I think there's a lot to be learned from people who can just be more compassionate and take the time.
Oh, yeah. I think compassion can bridge a lot of gaps in people and understanding and just, you know, it's compassion comes with empathy as well. You got to sometimes put yourself in their shoes. And I know, like you said, everyone's kind of focused on their own thing. So it's very hard to sort of take your mind out of yourself to put yourself in someone else.
Exactly.
And it's the littlest things, but again, it's just those things that people
makes all the difference.
It makes all the difference.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we said, there's an impact with everything that you do, and who you help out can help someone else. And those small times you can do that for yourself, it can make a big difference to their day or their whole entire year or life.
That's true.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of mentorship, I think it's quite key to have one.
So key.
How do you sort of find one for yourself? How do you encourage people to find a mentor, get yourself something or someone close to you and sort of build up?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
To be honest, I think I got quite lucky with my first one. It was a coach based in London. And there's different styles. That's one thing that you're going to have to notice, like, within, I guess, the coaching market or the coaches that are out there. There's people who are just all about action,
mm-hmm.
and they say that you just need to get over yourself and just take action. They are hugely powerful,
mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the time you don't have that accountability in your life. Like, mm-hmm. even your friends, your mom, your dad, your mom loves you, so she's not going to necessarily tell you, like, I don't know, it's always biased, right? Like, she always thinks you're perfect as it is, like, so she's not always going to look for you, like, the same way you're always looking to, you know, become more and reach a new level. Your mom loves you the way you are. And, like, technically, I mean, she's got a truth right there. Right? You should love yourself the way you are. But sometimes you just want to just, like, improve, be more in this life, right? And so there's the people that tell you just to do stuff. They can be useful. That was my first coach. There's people who are more on the spiritual level, people who are more on the sort of this level, like subconscious level, like stop fidgeting so much, stop fighting with the world. Yeah. Like everything's already there. Like you just need to open up to what is and start focusing your mind on what you want and just go for it. Mm. So there's a whole range. I think my advice would be to get in touch with someone who's been coached, or get in touch with a coach that you know and that you feel is a high level coach, like does powerful stuff, has got good referrals.
Yeah.
And then either we'll coach with them if they feel they're the right fit, or ask them for referrals if they don't, you know, for instance, like if there are men in London that wanted to be coached, my sister works to empower women, right? Mm-hmm. So like that wouldn't be the right fit, right? But she knows other male coaches that could help, or even female coaches that actually coach men too. So
yeah.
I think I would ask questions. The more and more I'm realizing how powerful networking is in that regard, is that you can go straight to the value.
Oh yeah.
Instead of making mistakes, and I've had bad experiences with coaches too. Mm. I've hired coaches where I've had to cancel the contract early.
Yeah.
Because I was not getting my money's worth, basically. Right. And I was unhappy with the experience, and I mentioned it. Mm. Nothing really changed, and so eventually I pulled the plug.
Yeah.
That's how it is. Like everything, like every service, like every training, there's good out there, there's great out there, there's shit out there, mm. there's bad. You need to do your homework. Yeah. Before I started working with the coach that I'm working with now, who's based in Canada, I think I, you know, sat and talked to maybe 5 or 6 different coaches before I actually pulled the trigger on this. So
yeah.
I think the longer you do your homework also and you find the right people, the more it's kind of like long-term or short-term, you know, of people course, get excited yeah. and they pull the trigger real early, but just take the time to find someone that's the right fit for you and that will actually get you to where you need to go.
It's really good to sort of hear that, because sometimes you think, oh, if I do this one big move, which is get a coach, it's like everything's going to lay out that way. Yeah. It's the same with everything. You know, you find your perfect car, you have to search for it. You got to go to exactly. the right dealership and stuff yeah. like that. But it's good to know once you find it, it's yeah. there for a while. It's there for hopefully a lifetime maybe as well.
Yeah.
Since you're a coach, what's the best thing about being one for you?
That's the best thing. Oh, the best thing I think is everything. I mean, you can see all these books. They're pretty much all on self-development and or on great leaders that inspired me. So I think the best thing about being a coach is that I get to go through everything that I will take my clients through. Mm-hmm. You know, I learn from my mentors and then I teach my clients. So I guess that's the best thing. And not only my clients, I try to share as much with as many people as possible.
Yeah.
One-on-one obviously is a very different experience because my clients get to go real deep into their own issues, their own stuff that's really holding them back, create that peace we were talking about. But I'd say for myself, like the best thing about being a coach is being able to get 1% better in my life every single day
yeah.
and noticing the difference. Every 6 months, I can look back and say, damn, I was so freaking different 6 months from now. Mm-hmm. And on this trajectory, I know I'll be so much better 6 months from today too.
I think it's the coolest thing because you're self-developing yourself and self-developing others.
Yeah.
And you're obviously getting a beneficial reward for it as well. Not many people can do that, and they kind of have to obviously take time out of their schedule to do that exactly. and not get the benefits of what you get. So it's cool that it's all kind of synergized into one area.
It's funny you mentioned that, actually. That was one of the epiphanies of me leaving my job. Mm. So when I was working in consulting, I was realizing that every hour that I was working in consulting, and kind of we were talking about this earlier in the podcast, finding the thing that really lights you up, I was realizing that every hour I was spending doing consulting mm-hmm. was one less hour that I could spend on stuff that I was actually ridiculously passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's always about that opportunity cost.
Yeah.
If you're doing something, you can't do something else.
Yeah.
And I think that gets lost down. Some people don't prioritize their time enough and they don't realize that their time is valuable, that what they're doing is important. Mm-hmm. Whoever they are, your whole audience watching, like every single person is important and what you do is important. And so you need to realize that it's like habits, like whatever you're doing takes time. Like if you're playing a game on your laptop mm-hmm. and nothing against that. I recently actually bought a Rome Total War because I was a big fan of that series.
Okay, right.
But basically like if you're doing that, mm-hmm. and I don't play that often, but you know, once in a while I'll do it because I think it's just fun. Mm-hmm. But if I'm doing that and I don't go to the gym, for instance,
yeah.
that's an opportunity cost. Yeah, if yeah. I'm taking my time to do that, if that's what I do in the evening, then I don't get to do something else. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's starting to sink in. Mm-hmm. That everything has an opportunity cost. And that was one of the big epiphanies for leaving my job, mm. was realizing, like, I would rather be out there hammering on my business, getting no results, and still learning all this stuff,
yeah.
and getting better and better and better and better every day, and being able to share the stuff that I actually want to share with people, mm-hmm. rather than doing some random stuff in consulting, which I had nothing against consulting. I was just not, I didn't feel at home.
Yeah.
I think to each their own.
Some
consultants are freaking phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that's what they should be doing. That's what they should do their whole life if that's what they're passionate about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we both come from the same background, funny enough. And I can say for myself, when I was in the consultancy world,
yeah.
you know, in the firm, I knew who were supposed to be there and who was just there for a certain exactly. period of time.
Yeah.
And I kind of had to look around and observe where I was. I was like, can I see myself being that version of that 1% guy,
yeah.
and I was like, I don't feel it.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
I could
yeah,
work yeah. hard for it. Don't get me wrong, but I can't.
Same here.
Sacrifice all that to be that because
yeah.
it's not in my DNA.
Yeah.
But what version of myself can I be? And I think that's why I started to sort of branch out, do my own thing, and now I'm spending hours doing this, you know, outside of my work commitments.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's work. Technically speaking, it is work, but I'm spending it out doing it because it's my life.
Yeah.
And I think that's how people should start living their lives. It's like, there's this balance of obviously work life, but when you're doing something that you love, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
And you know, exactly. yeah, and when you say you're playing games, it's for your leisure, but you go back to work.
Yeah.
And that's how it is. And yeah. there's nothing wrong with that at all.
Yeah. And vice versa, I guess. The point about the game too. Like, I don't know if have you played Rome Total?
No. But
it's an amazing PC game, or Mac. I use the Mac now, but yeah. Mac version. But I don't play that. I think I've played like maybe 2 hours since I got it like 3 weeks ago. But it's just like, when I played it, I enjoyed it. Mm. And I'm also one of those, that's how I live my life. Yeah. I don't live with regrets. I don't live with, I do what I do, and I know that everything has consequences, and I would love to have like a word that's more positive, because I feel that's got a negative connotation, but everything comes with consequences. Like, everything has an outcome, I guess, or everything that you do with your time has an outcome, right? Like, you know, you got your own business, so like, I guess you're in a contract role now or something like that, but like, you know that either you're prospecting from time to time, keeping in touch with your network to see maybe, you know, when maybe the contract ends, or you want to do something else, that you have something lined up, you know, afterwards. Mm. Or, and I feel for me, it's the same thing. Like, you either are spending time on stuff that's going to benefit you, like, you know, long term or not. With the caveat, obviously, of this, I also think it's essential to do things that just make you happy when you want to do them too.
Yeah.
You need to relax, you need to chill out. That's why I was also talking about, watching a movie in the evening. That's my way of disconnecting. Because I feel as an entrepreneur too, it's very easy to constantly be sort of like in work mode, if not even doing anything, thinking about what you could be doing, slash planning, slash, you know, what should you execute on. So I think finding ways to disconnect is hugely important. We were also talking about the gym too.
Oh, today, so. But I think I see a lot of entrepreneurs going to the gym now and saying, you know, it's a way of focusing, but also a way of stress relief and stuff like that. And well-being is such an important thing as well, obviously mental health and, you know, making sure that you keep that side of your life, you know, in tip-top shape as well.
Yeah.
Do you find a fine line with, obviously, success, being a success coach and obviously mental health? Do you feel like you dive into that, or do you kind of say, okay, make sure you're okay first before you get yourself involved in this journey?
Oh, got you. So if you wanted to become a coach?
A coach, or even a client as well.
Okay. Yeah, actually, it's a good question. Yeah, I guess coaches tend to work with people, in my experience, coaches tend to work with people who are not happy with their life, but they're not like depressed either, which is a different category. And like, in general, that's more like for a therapist or a psychologist or, you know. So, I think in to respond to your question, like, I think it is important to have a decent baseline, I think, to do coaching.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think, like, anyone can benefit from it. Because essentially what coaching is, a lot of people just have no idea what coaching is. And so in the simplest terms, coaching is basically the nature of having conversations that take you out of a state of feeling trapped.
Mm.
If you're feeling trapped in your job, if you're feeling trapped in your dating life, if you feel trapped in whatever it is, your money situation, it's an idea of unlocking your mind to more opportunities, more possibilities, such that you can go take action on it. And that's the huge part too, is that it's not just about the conversation, it's everything that follows up behind it. It's taking action. It's deciding that you'll no longer stay in the position you are and that you're willing. That's why I was saying it's a commitment. That's why I always say, whenever I take on a new client, I say, I'm proud of you that you came on this journey, because you're admitting that there's something that doesn't sit right with you and you want to move past it. You want to undertake that thing. Probably there's fear around it too.
Yep.
You're deciding you're going to take action. And you know as well as me, like, you know, when there's fear there, the action is not that easy.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of a coach, regardless of that, obviously we help them. I help my clients get through it, right? But I can't do it for them.
Mm.
So every one of my clients, I always give them full respect and full ownership for whatever it is. And I always say, if you work with me, I'll turn up 100% for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Every session, every day, I'll turn up 100% for you. But in order for this to work, you need to take 100% ownership too.
Yeah.
It's the only way it works.
It has to be that way. It's 100-100 from each person. So.
Exactly. And I think that's the part that doesn't get understood. Some people think that a coach will solve your problems.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what people are thinking, they should not do coaching, because it's you are the one that changes your life.
Yeah.
You are the one.
I think it's interesting because, again, I believe in 100-100 thing for everything.
Yeah.
Like, even when you're talking to people, even when you're in relationships.
I like that.
You have to put 100
in. You're right.
Otherwise, that person, if that person's putting 50, you can't drag them to 100.
Relationships is huge.
You have to put friendships, everything has to be 100.
You start
realizing, okay, who's really giving their 100? Do I spend that much time putting my 100 into them? Maybe not so much. And then that's when you start pivoting and you
get it.
Because it's all about the exchange of value as well.
Yeah.
And energy and all that stuff. I believe in that. And
yeah.
You know, you feed off each other. So you don't want someone who's just, okay, sluggish, not willing to do it.
Completely.
Otherwise, you're burning your 100, you're burning your time. It could be used somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like the opportunity cost.
So true.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's powerful, guys.
We're learning a lot. So in terms of the podcast, what else do you want to promote? Is anything in particular?
Well, they can find me at nicholascharlet.com. I guess if you have show notes, podcast notes or something like that, I'll share all that with you. I've got an Instagram channel, I guess, or I guess not call it channels, YouTube channel.
Yeah.
I don't know what,
go for
what
it
the
is.
calling it these days. But I've got an Instagram account, so I share a lot of live stories on there. Not so much like daily posts or anything like that, but people can follow my day-to-day story, which I think is pretty cool. I love watching other people's posts or stories. The final thing that I was telling you about also is I run a networking group in London where I invite professionals of all types. We've got bankers, we've got guys working in consulting and fintech, we've got startups, people, entrepreneurs, we've got just a whole coaches. We've got a wide range of different professionals. The idea is, the way I always describe it is, two heads are better than one and 10 are better than two. So we bring people together, and the idea is I try to attract people who want to add value, people who are going in to give a helping hand.
Yeah.
And when you've got 10 people doing that for each other, the value in it just shoots up, because instead of thinking about yourself, you think about other people. And it just takes a lot of pressure off yourself, and also is really beneficial to the group. So that's what I'm doing. I'm hosting that monthly. Looking to grow that as big as possible. So yeah, if people are interested in that, again, I'll share that with you. It's called the Round Table.
Yeah.
There's no official website or anything like that. I've created a meetup group for it though. So that's in the making.
Perfect.
I'll share all that with you too.
Yeah, share all the details. I'll put in the description.
Awesome.
And you know what? It's been a pleasure. I know this podcast has been a long one, but it's been the most value-added podcast, I believe, ever.
Amazing.
And, you know, I look forward to more discussions with you.
Steven, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And yeah, take care, guys.
Cheers.
Hey podcast listeners, thanks for listening, and thanks for my special guest, and thanks for clicking the play button. But I need you to do four things for me. I want you to like, comment, subscribe, and share this content.
It will help tremendously with the growth of this podcast, and I'm producing more content than ever. So I want you guys to be the first to know, and I want others to know as well. So do those four things for me and help this podcast grow to a bigger platform. Thanks for listening.